In the last 10 years, our field has gone from an unknown specialty to a household name. This brings unprecedented opportunities, but we need to rise up to meet them and give our patients the care that they deserve. In order to help others get better, we need to be better. This podcast will help you to become more confident with your patients, more successful in your practice or business, and a leader in pelvic health. And we're going to have some fun along the way. Join us as we rise together. We're Jesse and Nicole Cozine, founders of Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy and the creators of the Pelvic PT Huddle. And this is Pelvic PT Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Pelvic PT Rising Podcast with Jesse and Nicole Cozine. So excited to bring you Dr. Katie Beyer. She is a member of the Pelvic PT Rising business family. She is the owner of Transition Physical Therapy. Katie, thank you so much for jumping on. I really appreciate you being on the show.
I am very glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just dive right in. You are running an awesome practice in Virginia. Mm-hmm. You've got family stuff. You've got three kids. Like, give me the, how does that work? And we're going to go back and I'm going to ask you some history stuff, but I just don't understand how you're like keeping little people alive while running a business successfully.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why I started the business is that it gave me autonomy and flexibility to live a life with three kids who are, so I have twins, all three girls, twins who are 11 and a single who is 7, and they're getting busier and busier. I have less and less control of their schedule and owning a business, which I started the practice. It's 5 minutes from my house. I used to travel all around, which was great, but it was hard being, you know, an hour away from the house. So now if things happen, if I need to get back to school, if I just, you know, it gives me more time in the office and work time, and then I can shoot home if I need to. So opening the business, especially being so close to where I live, and I actually love this little town I live in. I'm in a little suburb of DC called Vienna, Virginia, and it's this awesome little town that's very supportive of small business. And it's great to kind of be a part of a community too, which I was lacking before. And then kind of integrating myself here, my kids are very much a part of the school kind of world. And it's been really, really great just kind of becoming a part of this community and just being able to be in my kids' lives as much as I can. And I'm able to do that, which is awesome.
Yeah, really crafting your ideal life, like with a true work-life balance and kind of framing that the way you want it to be, it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, within obviously it's not always quite that pretty, but in general, I've been able to, really craft my life around the kids and being able to, you know, I felt like, oh gosh, I need to be there for them so much. But as I get older, I'm actually realizing that it's more important now. Like they're really humans. They need help. They need emotional support. I want to know what they're doing in school. I want to know who their friends are. I want to be around. So this is giving me the ability to do that, which has been just really awesome. I know how kind of lucky we are and to be for me to be able to do that. And also I'm just happy that I've kind of found this place where it kind of works for me and works for our family.
That is so cool. And obviously, I mean, that's what it's all about, is making the business work for you with twins. I've got so many twin questions because I feel like that is like my engineer brain starts running and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like the most efficient way to do it. Is that, I was like, man, you muscle through, you change a heck of a lot of diapers for a long time. But then like once you got both of them through, they're through. And is that true? Or is that insane that I even said that?
No, it is. And I've said similar words. So they were a surprise. This was like literally, you know, second ultrasound. They figured out as twins. So it was very much a shock. And it was, you know, I would say if I had to choose, which we obviously didn't, I'm glad they were first because we were just kind of naive, didn't know what was going on, didn't know any other way. And it was a lot of physical work in the beginning. And everyone said, we get two for one. And it's like, we ended up having a third, which people sometimes I think scratch their head at. But then as they get older, it's just changes. That's the case with kids in general, but like initially it is just, it's a lot of physical work. You're exhausted. Like you said, it's like, you know, 20 diapers a day. And then now it's just trying to balance like the emotional piece of like sisters, but also twin sisters who are the same age and how are going back and forth with different issues. But I would never change it because obviously I love them and I would never change it now, but it's, you know, it's its own unique path. It's its own unique story, but they're great. I mean, they are wonderful together. It's kind of a love-hate relationship between them, but they are definitely like best friends, which I have only brothers. So the fact that I have three girls now, like it's been just so cool to watch not only sisters, but twin sisters, especially like just become best friends. And even more than that, it's like a deeper level, which is pretty cool.
That's really neat. That's so awesome. And it sounds like you're integrating into the community, but that would mean that you're not a native Virginian.
No, so I'm not at all. So, well, at this point, I am more than I have been at home, but I was born actually in upstate New York, but I consider my roots to be in New England. So my parents now live in New Hampshire. My family has been in Maine for centuries. So I very much feel like a New Englander, but I left home in 18. I really never went back. And I don't even know if I could explain why, but I definitely wanted to just kind of escape and do my own thing. And then for whatever reason, the DC area just kind of felt like a second home. And so we've traveled all around, my husband and I, but we just kind of ended up returning back here. And it's just been a really great fit. I don't know. I can't even explain it. I tend to go by my gut a lot. And I just always felt like this place just felt right for us, or for me. I'll speak for me. And so we ended up back here and, you know, we really like it.
That's awesome. And how long ago did you move back to where you are now?
So we have kind of a more sense of history. So we went to undergrad. My husband and I met in undergrad in Virginia and then lived in the DC area for a couple of years. I went south to Richmond for graduate school, for PT school. And then he went back up north for his MBA. I followed him and that's where I started. So I had my first job actually in a hospital, more of a kind of a neuro, ended up in a neuro floor in a kind of a general hospital kind of in the area. And I knew I wasn't going to stay there. I knew that was not where my heart was, but I wanted to have the medical kind of like just base to kind of just see where people come from. I just knew if I didn't do it then, I wasn't going to do it. And it felt like a good fit. We knew we probably wouldn't be there forever. Kind of felt like a good fit just to like do for a few years. And that's what I did. And it was great. I'm really still glad that I did it. And while I could never, ever see myself there now, it was a great first step kind of towards my evolution as a PT.
Yeah. And then what got you into pelvic health? Was it right after that or did it take a while for you to bounce around a little bit?
Yeah. So when we moved to New Jersey after that, which is kind of a random stop in our path, that's where our twins were born. I did just very general outpatient rehab. It was a little bit then that I would see these women and I think at that point as them being postpartum, but they were like in their 50s, 60s with all of these like hip, low back, like, you know, they just all had kind of had the same diagnosis. And then when we moved back to the DC area and I started my next job, which was like a concierge style where I would travel around and see people, it just started to strike me more. And then with my second pregnancy, I just really, between the first pregnancy and the second, I just things started clicking. But like these women, if they had just taken care of some of their pelvic health, just overall health, nothing was ever addressed, you know, during their pregnancy and postpartum. And initially it was more of an orthopedic kind of like, now they're dealing with all of this, you know, hip stuff, back stuff. They're just in pain because they never, ever got treatment. And that kind of started that. And then along with my own pregnancy journey. So I had a C-section with the twins and then I had a VBAC, so a vaginal birth after cesarean with my single. And so I just experienced, you know, both types of deliveries and both postpartum journeys and, you know, my own physical issues, along with just the lack of not only care, but even just like the thought to refer or even like the knowledge. And I was a PT, like I should have had a leg up on the vast majority of the population. But even then, especially after my first, it was just like, I guess I just kind of live in with the pain, take the meds, and then kind of just move on and exercise and, you know, kind of do the traditional PT stuff. So between the first and the second, I kind of started down the journey of just realizing kind of truly what pregnancy, PT, and then postpartum and pelvic health was, and obviously stuck. So
yeah. And were you ever recommended pelvic floor physical therapy at any point in your first pregnancy, second pregnancy, any place along the way?
Never once. Never was told to touch my scar. I actually was told by one of my doctors that Kegels, quote unquote, don't work. But you can do them, which now kind of just feels, at the time when you're kind of just staring at this person who's doing a pelvic exam, you're kind of just like, okay. And I ended up getting my own pelvic floor PT, but not because I was referred, because I asked for it, because I then knew, had the knowledge after my second pregnancy, after my VBAC, that it would help. And it did. So no, I was my own advocate. And unfortunately, like, I knew enough to do that at that point, but I had a whole heck of a lot more knowledge than the vast majority of my patients do.
Yeah. I don't know how anybody navigates the medical system. It's such a challenge. Even I see it for the people who are in the medical system who know what to be asking, and to think that somebody who's super overwhelmed and doesn't even understand that, it breaks my heart really for people who can't navigate that stuff. I love what you talked about too, of seeing all this stuff later in life that can be traced back to not getting proper, almost preventative care after pregnancy, after delivery. I mean, no one would ever fund this study, but man, I think about this all the time, especially with, and I know you see a fair number of chronic pain people. We obviously do at Pelvic Sanity. How much could we lower the percentage of that if we just gave everybody 3 or 4 visits of physical therapy after pregnancy?
Yep. I mean, obviously we know other countries are doing it. And I think, unfortunately, America is not known for any kind of preventative health, whether in, I think, pelvic or anything that's in the female realm is even less so. So I think, you know, it's like, when this actually will evolve, we'll see what happens. But I still think it's going to happen at some point. But I think, you know, I always say, you know, to my patients, I'm like, you know, I think we're getting better, but medicine is a dinosaur. It moves very slowly. And then unfortunately, I think in this specific area, even though it has a really, you know, I think social media is helping things to trend and make things more, you know, I think women are more aware of it, but I think the true, like the medical backbone of this will just take longer. And I think we'll kind of be pulling it kind of into the next level, because it's not going to happen on its own through the, you know, medical schools and, you know, the people who are in older doctors who are sitting in office right now.
Yeah. I love that you bring that up, because I do think that that's one of the coolest things about more people branching out, starting their own businesses. One of the things that leads to is more people on social media, more people out there educating, more people knocking on physicians' doors and being like, what the hell? How did you not refer this person? Just more of that, more awareness. I think you're totally right. Is, I know Nicole's seen a lot in the field. I know you have as well. We haven't really seen a big change in physician attitudes in the last 15 years, but we have seen a big change in overall awareness. And that's being driven by PTs being out there and doing the thing, and not by, like you said, the backbone of the medical community changing at all that we can see.
No, I agree. And I think it also comes from the patient. So I try to advocate, you know, like, just tell your doctor, I don't care if you tell them it's me, just say, I got pelvic floor PT. And A, why didn't you tell me about it? B, this is what they're doing, and this is how it helped me. And just kind of like, you know, I think because that's their, I mean, I hate to say it, you know, source of income, that's their source of, that this is what drives movement, right? Is money. So I think it will help to have the patient doing it. So I always say that, I'm like, you know, you were the best advertisement for me. Go back, talk to them. You are the change, and you're really who they're working for, you know, versus me coming in and saying, I can help your patients.
Right. No, absolutely. I agree 100% that patients going back to their physician and having that uncomfortable conversation, which is hard,
frankly,
patients shouldn't have to do.
No.
That's the thing that's so frustrating, is that is the most effective. They shouldn't have to do it, but it is one of the ways that we drive this conversation forward. So, you know, I think that's, you know, just really unfortunate that that's the way that is. Do you get many of your patients now from physician referrals, or is it mostly people finding you on their own?
I wouldn't say I'm split, but I will also say that, so I have a couple physicians who I feel like are kind of in the know. They know me personally, which helps obviously, and advocate. The vast majority who even come from doctors are coming because they asked for it. Or, you know, they went and said, hey, I hear that, you know, that pelvic floor PT can help. What do you think? And oftentimes, like, I hear that they're like, ah, you know, I'll give you a prescription, but, you know, like, I don't know. So I have a few who definitely advocate, you know, as far as physicians, but I think unfortunately most of my patients are either finding me on their own and I'm telling them, you know, because in Virginia we need to have a prescription within the first 30 days. So we don't have direct access. So I have to like say, hey, you know, I know you found me. That's great. Like, let's work on just getting a prescription. And most will give it. I've never run into an issue where a physician or provider would not, but it's more of like a, hey, can I have, or, you know, I've started BT. Can I just get this to continue versus someone saying, this is what you need, you know, like without being asked.
Yeah. It seems like such a little thing. And, you know, we had another phone call with somebody who was like this morning, who had been going and advocating for herself for 16 years, talking to her physician, dealing with pelvic pain. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's, how is it not at least even if you think it's the dumbest thing in the world, right? Even if we're on the skeptic train, how hard is it to just be like, hey, this is an option for you?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wish I had an answer. Like I always say, like, I think it's not their wheelhouse, but like they need to know when to refer, you know, like this is not their job. Then patients always ask, what's the difference? Like, what do you do? Like when they ask about, you know, what I do versus what they do, it sounds a lot like the same, like, you know, it's very different, but like, I think as long as they have an appreciation for that, it's, you know, it's not their realm, but hey, let's just refer, let's just try it out. Like you said, like, why not?
Like, what do we really coming, have to lose?
Well, if someone's coming to you with an issue, like, why not try to help? That's what I understand. Especially the people come to me and just say, you know, they just kind of said, well, you know, that's just postpartum, or, well, we'll just see what happens, or, you know, take some medicine or whatever. It's like, you know, try to find some kind of care that actually has the proven benefit. And there's enough research behind it now if they're, you know, kind of in that world. But it baffles me that providers out there, A, don't know, or B, think it still is invaluable.
Yeah. This is another one that just drives me crazy as a spectator, is that I see such a huge like gender gap with this too, right? Where it's like, if that was a male patient in your office, would you really be saying, oh, you know, it's fine, that'll probably go away, right? It's like, I walk into a urology office, I was like, man, I had trouble getting an erection one time. And he's like, oh my God, here's the whole pharmaceutical kit. If you don't have that, then you can have surgery. It's like, you should dismiss that a little bit more and maybe be a little bit more. It just is so apparent from our perspective, just how unequal that is.
It's extremely unequal. And I think obviously within that, you know, a gynecologist or a OBGYN, they're obviously, you know, dealing just with half of the population with vaginas. So I feel like they would say, oh, no, 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 you know, I'm not fine. This is all I'm dealing with. But I think it's just the way the medical community is built is where research is put in, because research is not done on women. And I think there's just an overall standard that's different. And we just aren't acknowledged, you know, we're more seen to be like, oh, all you need to do is relax, and all you need is a glass of wine. Like, it's all in your head, which, you know, is like, obviously infuriating, but just like, it's just also, you know, if you look at the science, isn't true. So that's what kills me, is that, you know, at least look at some of the science.
Right. Researchers, you heard it here first. Women are not just men without penises.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Could we please?
Here, here. Yes.
So talk to me then about, we're going through your career, you're getting into pelvic health, you've experienced it yourself. Like, what causes you to make the transition, literally, to transition to physical therapy?
You know, I think I thought about it for years. I am, as many PTs are, somewhat type A, and I really like things done a very certain way. But I was scared of the business part because I'm not good at it. You know, I'll say in quotes, because I figured out eventually, but I really was nervous about that piece of it. So I had a job before this where I was very autonomous and I really loved the job, but I wasn't the leader. I wasn't, you know, the boss, quote unquote. And I also was traveling more. And I think I just felt the need to, like, just again, like we said, be a little bit closer to home. And I wanted complete control, which you don't have when you're not the boss. So I think I wanted to be able to treat people in a office that I built, I designed. It had all this stuff that I wanted, had all the educational tools that I wanted, had the environment that I wanted, which was, you know, a little bit more just kind of peaceful and welcoming and And I just wanted all of my things. That's probably a little bit of just my type A personality. But it all just kind of, I just think about, we moved a couple of years ago and I thought, gosh, if we hadn't moved, I don't know if I'd be like, everything kind of just came together. I feel like all the pieces just merged in this. So I opened the business in April and, even with COVID, it kind of felt like a silly time to open a business in some ways, but also in some ways it felt right. Cause it just felt like we were hopefully coming out of this, and it just felt like a time where things were kind of opening and I could kind of start maybe a little bit slower and get the gears going. And I figured out the business stuff, which still is not easy for me, but I was able to do it. And I think I was glad that I proved that I could do that to myself, but yeah, it kind of all just came together, which I don't know. I feel like it's kind of just how I tend to work as things kind of just, I go by my gut a little bit and then try to use, reality and common sense too, but.
Yeah. And I know your husband has a business background. Is he involved much at all? Or is this like, absolutely not like, we're going to murder each other if we talk business?
No, well, sometimes we do murder, but no. So he does. So he's actually like, he's not an accountant, but he has a financial background. And so he is my quote unquote accountant for now. So we'll see, but he does all of the, he is so patient with somebody who knows zilch about taxes and that stuff. So he goes through and does all of that stuff. So yes, he is a big part of this. And I couldn't have the same business. I mean, I could hire out, but obviously that would change things and be more expensive. And so no, he's the backbone. He's kind of the background, but very, very integral to it.
That's awesome. And then you, it was interesting. So a lot of people call us after they have started their business and hit a little bit of a plateau or realize that there's something that they're lacking in terms of their knowledge. You called us before you even opened the doors. What made you pick up the phone? Like, what was your thought process? Because obviously, like, from our perspective, that's great. We can hit the ground running and all of that. But a lot of times, you don't necessarily know that you're going to need that until you run into a wall. And I feel like you were really proactive about reaching out before you hit a wall.
I mean, I think a little of it was fear, because I kept preventing me. I think that fear prevented me in the past from taking the step. And so I had started it. I kind of had decided I was going to do it, but I think I just knew I needed help and help from, yes, a business side. So like I could have gotten, business, I could have done training and some kind of business, but like I needed everything, right? So I need the business attached to the clinical, attached to all the other stuff. Because obviously, our, like every business, you have little things that are different. And this is a very specific business with, little intricacies that change it from any, or that are different than anything else. So it just seemed like something I needed to kind of get out. And could I have done it? Sure. Yes, I'm sure I could have gotten started. I don't think I would have gone under, but I think it really helped to just put my brain in a place where I was organized. And I tend to kind of just kind of let things happen versus like you're really good at providing us with lists and like, do this and make sure we check this off and we list this. And that's been very helpful because it's not my natural tendency. So it's something I kind of always have to work on, but without being pushed, I wouldn't do it. So
I love that you recognize that about yourself, because that is something, I think I even remember we talked about this on our initial call when you were seeing if this was something that you wanted to do. I think I even said like the world's worst sales job, but like, Katie, looking at you're going to be successful. Like we're just going to make that road a little bit easier and faster and smoother for you. But like there's looking at all of your stuff going on. It was like, oh yeah, you're going to be a successful practice owner. It was just like,
yeah,
we can make this a little bit easier, a little bit faster for you. And it was like, cool. Like, let's roll then. That was so yeah. I love that it's, you don't have to be having like a massive problem to get coaching. I feel like that's like this huge mistake that we all have, I think, now in our collective conscious. It's like, oh, you have to be having this massive problem in order to get help. And it's like, well, a lot of PTs were athletes. It's like, it's not like we stood around and like just played pickup basketball until we had a problem and then called over a coach. It was like, oh, yeah. That's the way that we progress, is like we have deliberate training. We have people who have done this before. We have a roadmap.
Yeah.
Why don't we just start there and not have a massive problem first,
Yeah. I think it's like the whole preventative care type thing. It's like, let's get ahead let's not wait for if in my business, I'm like suddenly like, oh crap, you know, what do I do? And then it's a lot harder to get out of that. Plus I think being in, so I'm a solopreneur, having a community of people, you know, and like I have PT friends in the area, which is great, but having the very specific pelvic other solopreneurs or at least small business who are kind of sharing, we all have very similar issues and doubts. And it's funny how there's, you know, me, you know, in the DC area and, you know, somebody else in the other side of the country, you know, it's like, oh, same issues. They exist everywhere. And sometimes just the confirmation that is what's happening. It's not just me, is in having a community to bounce that off of is almost more valuable in some ways. You know, it's like that just like, you know, that keeps you being able just to continue and be confident, which is what you need to continue as a business.
Oh, I 100% agree. I love that you say that too, because that is, I mean, it's a thing that Nicole and I draw inspiration from and seeing you guys doing it. And we're all in the same boat as business owners. We're all in that. And it can be super lonely when you're starting off. You don't, no one else really gets it. And yeah, I do love, because we can preach it as much as we want as well, that every business should look different and you need to be building it to fit your life and your business has to work for you. But it's one thing to hear that from us, but it's another thing to see that from 50 different practices who are all doing it their way and finding their own definition of success as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And then you made the transition from mobile to brick and mortar in like record time. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about that. Cause you would, I know a lot of people kind of start with, oh, I'm going to do concierge when they're starting their business. And you knew from doing that, that, hey, that this is not where I want to be.
Yeah. I had done that for about 7 years and I loved it. I really did. It was great in all realms for that place in my life. So when my kids were young and they were starting school and it just got to, for a couple of reasons, you know, that being wanting to be closer to the kids, especially as they get older and have more quote unquote real problems. And also just lifestyle, being 5 minutes from my office is fabulous. But also it's the whole control thing. I love the education piece and I love being able to like sit and like talk to patients. And I felt like I got to a place where I didn't have my big pelvis and I didn't have my, you know, my book, my netter, and I didn't have this, and I didn't have that. And I wanted all my stuff in one place. And I was, you know, maybe I could have hauled all that around, but I just wasn't doing it. So it was really nice to have all of my stuff in one place for the education piece, but also, you know, weights and other things that I wanted access to, but it was just harder with the concierge model. And, you know, I think also at some point just having patients come to me, I was just ready for, which is maybe sounds strange, but just kind of having that dynamic felt right in that, and when I shifted. So it always kind of fit my life. But I think, you know, a lot of it, I really love the education piece. And I felt like that was lacking a little bit when I was traveling. And I could have gotten creative, but I like having my stuff, my models and my books, and I have all that where I am now. So
yeah. And then at what point did you realize, oh, this is going to work. Like, this is going to be a thing. Was there a moment or was it a gradual realization? Because sometimes I feel like we can see that so clearly and it's harder when you're in it. But did you ever have that moment where you were just like, oh yeah, this is happening?
Yeah, I guess I have to say I'm always weirdly, like I never thought I was going to fail. I always felt confident and I don't even know why. I don't have a reason for why I felt that way. But I think once I shifted, so I was doing part-time my old job and my new job, and I just decided there was a point where I was like, you know, I'm full enough where this, I can completely detach. I think I was holding on for a couple of reasons, because I didn't want to cut it off, but also for a little bit of, I think, security. And I realized I don't need that. And that probably was, so I opened in April. And I think it was like, I started feeling that way probably in May, but I think maybe June, I was like, you know what, I just need to detach, that I need to do my own thing. And it's worked out. So it's good.
Yeah, that is. And that is always a really difficult transition, a big leap of, I am going to have to leave behind kind of the safety net a little bit. And some people do that all at once and other people inch into it. And, you know, it just is really cool when that becomes, and I know you probably can speak to this a little bit. Sometimes it feels like that safety net is actually holding you back more than you realize a lot of times. At least that's kind of how we see it. Did you feel that way? Like once you finally said, hey, I'm focusing 100% of my time and mental energy on transition physical therapy, building it. Did you feel like, oh, like that's a little like a jolt of wind to your sails?
It was. And I think for a couple of reasons. I think I liked having just one lane and not being in two places. I also just felt like now it's all me, right? Like it's all what I've started. And, you know, I think it's easier to have your brain in one place, but also is that like the confidence of being like, yes, I can do this. It is just me. It is only me. I'm not relying on that like extra couple patients from over here. And yeah, I think it was definitely, you know, it felt great to do that. I felt, I don't want to say the guilt isn't the right word. You know, I knew I was going to miss my old job a little bit, but it was worth it in the end. The feeling I got when it actually was just me. And, you know, now it's funny, it's not that long ago, but it seems like forever ago that I wasn't, you know, on my own. So it seems like a long, long time ago.
Business years are like dog years like that. I feel like the time just doesn't mean the same thing.
No. We were just doing taxes the other day and I was like, wait, it's only been this many months? I feel like I've been doing this forever.
And especially when you're starting off, it really is like you have a new business every 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, you're going from like, hey, I'm transitioning. Now I'm really hustling. Now I have to do, now I'm almost full. Now I have totally new problems than you had even a couple months before.
Yes. Right. Which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the dance, right? It's getting to better and better problems each time.
Yep.
How do you feel like that process has kind of, because one of the things that we always talk about is that business growth really necessitates or drives or it follows personal growth. Mm-hmm. Is there any way you feel like as a business owner, you've been kind of pushed or stretched or something you're really proud of how you've changed or handled in your business?
You know, I think what I'm most proud of is like, I knew I could do the PT stuff. I felt confident in that. And I think that's always where my confidence in starting the business came from. I like working with people, you know, I like that interaction. I was very proud of myself for figuring out all the silly little things along the way, like starting my website and figuring out how to connect it to a domain. So it's all, honestly, I think my pride is in these like really relatively small moments that for me were pretty big. And for me were my hurdles. That's like, that was my wall for a long time. And so, you know, I was doing something one day and it literally took me hours and I realized it could have taken me like minutes, you know, and it's like everything took me longer, but I did it. And I didn't ask for, I would Google things and ask my husband once in a while, but most of it came just from kind of hashing it out. So I would say those things, just those kind of smaller business moments that for me are like the big things.
Yeah. And it is amazing what you can do with a little bit of sweat equity when you're starting. It's like, man. Yeah. And, you know, I just want to commend you because Nicole and I see just how much you have put into the business and how consistent and really steady you've been. And that is really, really hard to do when you're starting off like that. And, you know, we just have been seeing you put in that consistent time, that consistent effort, and watching you build something that really does reflect you and what you believe about treatment. And, you know, your patients are lucky to have you. And we really have enjoyed working with you and watching you grow and really excited to see where you're going to go from here.
Thanks. Yeah. It's been great to have, like I said, a community. It's been great just to evolve as a practitioner and as a business person. And it's really just been, I mean, it's been hard, but overall it's been just a fun and positive experience. And it's been nice having a group of people to kind of support along the way to feel like you're not kind of just filling on your own.
Yeah.
Just kind of wandering on your own, just trying to figure it out.
Right. Right. Yeah. Confidence that what you're doing is the right thing. And that sometimes it's just confidence that like this shit's hard sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
yes.
You know, it's like, it's nothing you're doing wrong. It's
not just
meant
me.
To be hard. That's why not everybody does it. But sometimes that's really cool. Well, as one control freak to another, I am going to give you the last word on this podcast. I really just appreciate you being on. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on to say? We can close out. And I know you probably have a lot to be doing around the house. I'll let you get
well,
going.
Well, my kids are actually heading towards bed because we're on the other coast. But yes, I will be heading there to myself. No, I think it was just kind of nice just to talk about the whole thing, because it's like this process, you know, when you're dealing with it for months and you've kind of created this thing. So it's nice just to kind of talk it through. But no, I think I've said it all. And yeah, thank you for having me. This was fun.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks so much for being on. Guys, I'm going to put Katie's information down in the show notes. If you want to reach out, you can always take a screenshot of this, share it on Instagram, tag us both. Feel free to reach out. We always want to keep this conversation going, and let's continue to rise.